Right. We're all happy about that. That's the point. Dr. Bird said that he'll give us some talk. I know that you'll enjoy it very much. Thank you.
Jane Barber.
Jane Barber.
It's really a pleasure to be here. And I'm sure both my wife and myself feel absolutely at home. You would like to know how I came to Baba. Before we get on to other subjects, I think I'd rather introduce how I came to Baba. Well, I heard of Baba in 1948, but didn't get to see him till 1952. I must tell you about one saint that I met before I met Baba. I had met a lot of saints, but this one particular chap, he was important because one day when I went to see him, I didn't know who he was, but a friend of mine took me to him. This was in Bombay, and I entered the hall, and he was sitting at one corner of the room, and as soon as he looked at me, quite a distance, he said, "You go away." Yeah, I didn't know what was happening. And then he said, "Then there is somebody much higher than me who will take care of you later on." So, well, I said, "Okay." I didn't know who that I didn't know who that higher person was. But anyway, 17th of April, 1952, this was the day that I saw Baba for the first time. Now, I'll tell you that I heard about him in 1948. And a friend of mine told me that Baba was coming to Bombay on the 17th. This was just one day prior to his departure to the West. Remember, Baba left on his 1952 trip on 18th April. So a friend of mine told me that Baba is coming to Bombay, and why don't you go and see him? Because I was in the habit of seeing saints. So, well, I talked to a friend of mine, and she said, "Well, if you're going, I would like to also join you." So both of us, though I didn't really want to go that day, because I was appearing for my university examination in medicine, and just 8 days hence was the exam, and I didn't want to waste my time. So even then, both of us went to see Baba, and Baba was staying at Nariman's house, if you all know that, where that house is. The time for the darshan was from 9 to 8, 11 in the morning, and both of us, we searched and searched and searched, and we couldn't find the house. Ultimately, when we did get to the house, it was 11:15, and I remember it was Baidul who was standing there at the gate. I didn't know him then, but I now know that it was Baidul, and Baidul said, "I'm very sorry, the time is up, you cannot get darshan." I was quite annoyed about it, having wasted 2 hours of study time and not to get Baba's darshan. So we started arguing with him, and he went inside and came back with the same reply, "Very sorry, the time is up." We were not going. So the lady with me suddenly thought that, and she told him, "Tell Baba that we are devotees of Upasmi Maharaj." You know Upasmi Maharaj, that is Mir Baba's master. So when this message was carried inside, Baba immediately called us in. And he was sitting in Nariman's room in one corner, and both of us entered at the other end. And you see, we had seen a lot of saints before we met Baba. And normally when you go to a saint in India, you carry some flowers, you take a garland or some fruits or some sweets and bow down to him. Here we were going to see a Parsi saint, so we didn't know how to greet him. So we never took any flowers, we never took anything with us. And when we went into the room, we just didn't know what we were going to do there. And suddenly Baba does this, which means, the interpreter told us, Baba says, "Don't put your head on his feet." Okay, we were more lost than before. So, then he said this, so we sat down very near to him. Then he did this, and the interpreter said, "Baba says both of you are very good souls and he's happy to see you all." Then he did this, so the interpreter went, interpreter was Irich, I presume. And he went inside and brought 2 pieces of candy, and Baba gave one to that lady, and she caught hold of Baba's hand and touched it to her forehead, and then he gave it to me, and I did the same. And then, do you know what Baba says? "Go, get out." So within 2 minutes, we were out of the room. We ate the candy and forgot all about Baba. Really, this first contact with Baba had no impact upon me at all. But it grew over the years. And I met Baba again in 1954 and then 55. In 55, became very intimate with Baba. Because that was the time when we had a Sahavas program. You know what a Sahavas program is, like you had at Myrtle Beach, intimate companionship with Baba. And that was the time, really, that we got very intimate with Baba. And Baba just poured his love on you at that time. And we had been divided into several groups, because India, as you know, has as many languages as there are states. So we were in the Gujarati group, that is all the Parsi boys. And the Parsi boys, as you know, they're all full of fun and mischief. If the 10 Parsi boys come to Washington, I think they'll play hell into you. So these Parsi boys, we were 200 of them. 200 Parsi boys with Baba there, also a Parsi. So we really enjoyed the company and the fun we had. And the greatness of Baba was that he came down to your level. He came down to our level. And he played with us, and he ate with us, and we just had lots and lots of fun. I can tell you a few incidents that time. Each afternoon we'd have a heavy meal. All Parsis have heavy meals, you know. And here we really enjoyed the food there, because it was really good. And each afternoon after the meal we'd sort of relax a little and lays away for some time, because Baba would come again at 1:30 in the afternoon. And each afternoon when Baba would come back, we just sort of, you know, wash our faces and come back to the cabin room, or not the cabin room, the big hall at Mehrabad. You know the Mehrabad hall. So we'd all click there, and then Baba would ask us, is everybody here? So everybody would look around and say, yes, Baba. Then one day, one of the boys said, no, Baba, one of my friends is not here. Baba said, where is he? He's sleeping, Baba. Come on, let's go and wake him up, Baba said. So there Baba got up from the chair, and 200 of us followed him, and all went to the tent, and Baba said, don't make a noise, don't wake him up, I'm going to wake him up. So Baba got into the tent, and this fellow snoring away. And so Baba picked up a small thin stick from the ground and tickled him in his nose. And this fellow in his dream, he doesn't think. And Baba said, go ahead, don't make noise, don't wake him up. And then again Baba tickled him, and this fellow again. And the third time Baba gave him a big dig, and he got up with a fright. See Baba in front of him, 200 of us. He never overslept. That is one of the things. Then each day we'd play games with Baba. Sometimes we'd play seven tiles. You know that seven tiles? You know that game? Well, it's, you know, tiles from the roof fall down and break. So then the pieces are put one on top of another, and seven tiles, you know, piled one on top of another, and there are two parties. And then one party throws a tennis ball and tries to break that pile, while the other party tries to hop it. So Baba, you know, pick up his sadra, his long sadra, you haven't got a picture here. He'd put it into his pants like that and roll up his sleeves, and there he'd be ready with the ball, you know. And he was so quick and fast with the ball, you know, nobody could catch that ball over there in the opposite party. And then if you strike the seven tiles, you had to run away, because that opposite party had to strike you with the ball then. If they could strike you, then your party was out. And if we could come before they strike us and pile the tiles one on top of another, then we had got 1 point. So here each afternoon Baba would play with us these seven tiles, and it was really fun playing with him. And each afternoon, you know, after a good meal, everybody wants to sleep. And there Baba would be talking to us on some high subjects at times, you know, love and obedience and things like that. You know, Listen Humanity, if those who read the Listen Humanity, the book, the first part of it is a perfect description of this 5 days Sahavas in 1955. So some days he'd talk to us on this subject or that subject, and some of us would doze, you know. And Baba said, keep awake, keep awake. And then we just couldn't keep awake. So then Baba would say, come on, tell us some funny stories. And then one of the boys would get up and tell some funny story, and Baba would be laughing, and everybody would be laughing, and everybody would be wide awake. I don't want to tell you the funny story. And then all days was not fun. All days was not fun. Sometimes Baba was serious also, giving some important things, talked on love and things. And one day I remember when we were having lunch, Baba himself came round to serve us the food. And I don't know if you know what a puri is. Well, there are some round things made of wheat, and Baba came round with a big basket of them, serving puris to us. When he came to us, to me and a friend of mine, he says, "You don't know how fortunate," this is his sign of being fortunate, "you don't know how fortunate you all are that I am serving you these puris." We really didn't know the importance of these words then. Most of us, I think, when we say Avatar Mer Baba Ki Jai, or we call Baba as the Avatar of the Christ, we don't even know a thing of what we are saying. To imagine even the spiritual status of Baba is beyond our conception. It's beyond our imagination. The spiritual status of Baba is something so great. But because he came down to our level and played with us, we forgot that spiritual status. And even if we had to have an intellectual understanding of that status, we could never have known Baba as he really was. It was very, very difficult. One day I remember when two of us were sitting there near Baba, and Baba said, he was talking about alcohol. And Baba said, "Have you had alcohol?" So my friend said, "No." So Baba said, "When you have alcohol," and then he described all the things that happen to a person when he has alcohol. So Baba says, "I might describe this to you, or you might read books on this subject, and you might have a complete intellectual understanding of what that means. But until you taste the alcohol, you'll never know what intoxication means." So similarly, we can never know who Baba was until we become one with him. And that, I think, is impossible. Just impossible. So Baba, when he told us, "You have no idea how fortunate you all are when I'm giving you this food to eat," he said, I remember these words, and I just can picture Baba giving us that food, and he was saying, "There are so many in the Himalayas, so many yogis sitting there since hundreds of years, shedding tears of blood to even have a glimpse of me, and they don't get that. And yet you all are so lucky to be with me, to play with me, and here I'm giving you food, eat." Those words have a meaning now. They didn't carry much meaning at that time. Really, how great Baba was. And, let's not talk. Well, you break down. In this sawas came along a boy who was not much attracted by Baba. But somebody told him that why not come along. So he did come there, but he was not too happy about being there. And he was just sort of a spectator to everything that was happening. And this was not in our group, mind you, in another group. He was a Hindu boy. And one day, he was sitting for, you know, he got into a line for shaving. You know, in India, during the Savas programs, there's always one barber over there. And he comes there with his big cut throat, ready to shave everybody who comes and sits in front of him. It's an open air shave, you know. And so this fellow got into the queue, and he was rather skeptical about Baba and all the things that were happening there. And just when the man in front of him finished shaving, and it was his turn, suddenly one Baba lover comes running and tells the Baba, "Shave me first." This fellow, a very intelligent man, MA, PhD, and so many credentials to him. So this fellow thought that this man, how can he get inside when we are waiting in the queue for a shave, and this fellow comes and says, "Shave me first," and he plumps himself over there in front of this fellow. And already he was skeptical about Baba, and he felt that, is there injustice in Mehrabad also, where Baba, who calls himself God, Is he really God? If he is God, then this fellow must not be shaved before me, he thought. So, but this fellow insisted, and he sat down there, and the barber applied the soap on him. And it's the same razor for everybody, mind you. So this fellow was being shaved, and he got half shaved, and suddenly, while this man is thinking in his heart that this man must get up from here if Baba is really, really what he calls himself to be, suddenly there was a call for that man, that Baba is calling you. So he tells the man who is calling him, wait, wait, I'll finish my shave and come. So that man went and told Baba that Baba is having a shave, and he'll come out just a minute or two later. Baba says, call him now! So this fellow had to go to Baba with half soaked one side and half side shaved, you know. But why I'm telling you this is that Baba was trying to tell this fellow, this skeptical chap, that he knows what's going on in everyone's hearts and minds. And so this fellow had to go to Baba. Well, lots of things we did during those sevas, and I remember we had once a Qawwali program. You know what's a Qawwali program? These are spiritual songs sung by fellows who can sing them. I can, and nor can I understand them. But at times, you know, when they have to get into the tempo, and it takes a long time before they get into the tempo. And before they come to sing, you know, they sort of adjust the instruments, which itself takes an hour or so. And they wet their whistles with lots of cups of tea and things like that before they come in, and then with, you know, a wonky caps on their heads, and come and sit down and make all poses in front of Baba, and Baba thinks, yeah, because Baba used to enjoy these qawwalis. So, you know, what happens during these spiritual qawwalis, these spiritual songs, sometimes people would faint. And Baba would never like a disturbance during this qawwali program. And so, before the qawwalis begin to sing, Baba would keep two or three volunteers ready, so that in case somebody did faint, you know, it's the ecstasy, the joy of that singing that makes you go unconscious. So before this, Baba keeps two or three people ready. And I remember when we were there, one of the Parsi boys, big, hefty fellow, maybe one and a half times my size, and he was kept as one of the volunteers to pick up anybody bodily and take him out, so that there would be no disturbance and the program wouldn't be disturbed. So the qawwali program started, and Baba was really enjoying it, and that man was singing very well. Halfway through, everybody has eyes glued on Baba, and that singing and that atmosphere was so good. All of a sudden they hear a big noise, doom, you know. What happened? You know, this big hefty fellow, this volunteer, he fainted. Who's going to pick him up? And the whole program was spoiled, you know, because this fellow fainted. This is just something about the Sevas program. We had one 55 program. Then in 56, Baba came to my town. That's Navsari. And I've written a detailed account on that, of that visit in the Awakener. If you have one of the recent issues, it's called the Archives of Navsari. The four visits that Baba paid to Navsari. You can read that up somewhere there. Then in 58, again, we had the Sevas. And then Baba started coming to Guru Prasad. You know, Guru Prasad is the bungalow at Pune, and each year he'd come there end of March, stay through April, May, and go back in June. Lots of things happened in Guru Prasad, I must say, lots and lots of things. But I'll tell you some stories which I think the other Madli may not tell you, because they feel shy to tell you about these things. Some of the things that they used to do in the old times at Mehrabad. And these are not printed things, and therefore I said, don't print these things, because they shouldn't get in the book. I remember, this is from the Mandali only, that Baba, when he was staying at Mehrabad, Mehrazad wasn't existing at that time, that the food given to the Mandali was so meager and so poor that these poor Parsi fellows, you know, they just couldn't stand that food. And every day the same monotonous food for breakfast, lunch and dinner, the same thing. And usually it would be tea and chapati, or chapati and tea. And without milk. And you can imagine how these Parsi fellows, who, as I said, Parsi boys know how to eat, to chew. And all the visitors who came to see Baba, they bring a lot of food and sweets and all that. And all that food, Baba distributed to the Prem Ashram boys. So there would be so much food, and yet they didn't get even a piece out of that. So one day, each night, Baba would get all the remains of the sweets tied up into a sort of a packet. And then, you know, because there are rats and cats and with two legs and four legs also, so he'd get it tied up to the ceiling of one of the rooms, you know, so that nobody could reach it. And somebody had to climb up on a ladder to tie it right up, you know, so that nobody should reach it in the night time. And the next morning, again, these sweets would be distributed to the boys. So one of the Mandali thought, let's get to the sweets today. So, three of them, I won't name them, one of them passed away recently. So, three of them got together and planned how they could, you know, do the things in the night time, because Baba would retire to his room, and the three of them thought that it was impossible to take a ladder there because it would make noises and it would disturb somebody and Baba would come there or something like that. So the three of them, they collected there and quietly opened that room in the night time, and one fellow bent down while the other fellow climbed on his back, and the third fellow was holding his hand, and this fellow was just trying to open that thing. All of a sudden, who should come inside? Baba. Baba said, what's happening here? Baba arrived just at the time when he shouldn't have. I tell you one personal thing that happened to me also, something very funny like this. We were at Guru Prasad, and you know, the big hall of Guru Prasad was full, jam-packed, and all of us were looking at Baba, and there was some musical program going on. And when we were with Baba, at least myself, I talk myself, I don't know about the others, you know, I had my eyes glued on Baba all the time, because the maximum that we could, I mean, we just didn't want to move our eyes away from Baba. And people would come to see Baba, embrace him, somebody would cry, somebody would shed tears, somebody would do this, somebody would do that, and go away. But we never bothered, at least I never bothered to see who was coming in. Now, one such day when the music was going on, and people were coming one after another to Baba, and I was standing in one corner, my usual corner, and looking at Baba, all of a sudden, what should happen? A beautiful girl comes in the queue. And just when she comes to Baba, I looked at her. And just at that time, Baba looks at me and says, what are you thinking of? He knew our thoughts, he knew our minds, he knew our hearts, he knew everything. We were just open in front of him, you know, we couldn't hide anything. And especially when we had a sexy dream in the night, and the next morning, you sure, the Baba would ask you, what dream did you have last night? And in front of everybody, you'd have to tell it, you know? One of the Western ladies who was with Baba years back, she really loved Baba, but she, at the back of her mind, she always loved a horse also. She wanted a horse, you know, in Mirabad. And I hope that lady's not here, you know? And Baba knew what is going on in her mind, you know, she really liked horses. So one day, Baba asked Mandali to enclose a big area of the ground on the hill, and with bamboos and netting and all that was done, and nobody knew what all this was about. When the enclosure was made, all of a sudden, one day, one man comes along with a horse, because Baba had sent for a horse. And Baba calls this lady and says, well, here is a horse, and you're in charge of it. You've got to groom it, you've got to feed it, you've got to do everything for this horse. And she was all joy, because she really wanted a horse. So there she was, busy the whole day with that horse, you know, busy riding it and feeding it and giving it food. And every morning Baba would come with pocketfuls of carrots, and Baba would feed it, and she felt really happy. A month later, the horse fell ill, and Baba said, I think the horse should be sent back. So the horse was sent away. But anyway, she wanted a horse, and Baba gave it to her. But that doesn't mean that if you wanted a helicopter, he'd build a hangar for you there. No. At times, he was unpredictable. But he came down to your level and he knew everything that was going on in your heart. So then he could respond to every thought, every feeling he'd respond. And thousands of people there, and just at the time when you're thinking of something, Baba look at you and give you an answer for it. You know, he didn't have to give an answer verbally, he didn't have to give it with his hand. He just looked at you and you knew that Baba was giving you a reply to it. In these old days at Mirabad, I remember once Baba shifted the whole ashram to Toka. You know this place called Toka. So a few of the Mandali were left behind in the ashram, and there was one Irani gentleman, and Baba called them, you know what this sign means, cracked. So he was a wee bit cracked, and he was given the duty of a night watchman. And at that time there was a big dacoit called Satyamang, and this Satyamang was a terror to everybody. And one day they heard that he had robbed somebody on the road between Mehrabad and Ahmednagar. So everybody was frightened that he might come to the ashram also. And just that night, on the following night, what happened was that this Irani gentleman, a little cracked as he was on night duty, you know, with a stick. And every 15 minutes he had to shout, "All well, all well," so that people knew that he was awake and not sleeping. So suddenly he hears footsteps in the compound, and he really thought that Satyamang had come. So he got so frightened that all he could say was, "Satyamang is here, Satyamang is here." And he couldn't move from there, he couldn't see whether it was Satyamang or somebody else, but he was just stuck to the ground there, and "Satyamang is here, Satyamang is here." And the Mandali got up inside, and they heard this, "Satyamang is here, oh God, he's come here, what is he going to do?" One of the old Mandali fainted, you know. And then they came out with lanterns and big sticks and all, and when they did come out in the compound, it was a donkey. In the 1958 service, I remember one Baba lover from central India had come, and no children were allowed for that service. But this boy, this man, he wanted, he couldn't leave his children back at home. And you don't get babysitters back home. So he had to bring them. And he asked for pardon from Baba. So Baba said, "All right, it's all right that you brought them. But see that they don't come in the tent. That is where the meeting hall is. But leave them outside, somewhere outside, so that they don't disturb me." So he said, "Baba, it's all well taken care of because I've brought a servant, and she'll take care of the children and see that they don't come to the tent." Baba said, "Okay." One day, I remember, while the meeting was going on, Baba all of a sudden called this Mr. L and said, "Where are your children?" So he was giving a discourse, and all of a sudden he said, "Where are your children?" So he said, "Well, Baba, they are with my servant." Baba said, "No, they are not with your servant. Go and check." And he went there, and do you know what was happening? That big well, you know, just outside the ashram in Lower Mehrabad, there's a big well from where the water supply is coming right now. These children were playing on the wall of that well. And the servant had gone off somewhere or the other, and something, I mean, one of them could have easily fallen inside the well. And Baba saved the whole situation there. This man, the same man I'm talking about, he had a son who was absolutely mad at him, I must say that. And before that son was born, the mother had a very high temperature, and so the doctor said that the son, something had affected him, and he had gone completely mad. And and he's a very poor man, and with one son mad in the family, means you can imagine how difficult it was for him. But he loved Baba so much that he accepted Baba's will. And one day he thought, "Let me take this son to Baba." He had no money also. He had to borrow money to take his children and his wife to Baba. I remember sometimes in India, poor people coming from long distances. And I know one person who walked 700 miles just to come to see Baba once. In his lifetime, that was his only chance to see Baba, because he had no money. And those of you who've been to UP, that's Hamirpur district, Baba says, Hamirpur district is my heart. The people there have so much love for Baba. So these people over there, all that they live on is farming. They have very small plots of land, and their only possession is two bullocks with which they plow the land. And they'd sell off the bullocks in order to come to see Baba. And when they'd go back, there was nothing to live on. And this fellow didn't have even bullocks, so he walked 700 miles just to see Baba once in his lifetime. Can you imagine how much they suffered all throughout the journeys? And some of these Hamirpur fellows who used to come, I remember I was treating them, so Baba would tell me, take great care of them, they are very poor people. And they'd come traveling two and a half days to 3 days from their town to Pune. It would take almost 3 days by train to come. And traveling class 3 in India, oh God, it's just terrible. And these fellows would come right from that Hamirpur district to Pune. They didn't have money to eat. So all they would bring is bread from there, you know, these chapatis, thick chapatis. Right from Hamirpur they'd bring that, sop it up in water and eat that. Or bring an onion from the market, you know, an onion, you can get it anywhere, and cut it up, and with that chapati they'd eat that onion. I've seen this with my own eyes. And, it's just terrible how poor they are. But they're rich in Baba's love, very rich in Baba's love. And they're still contented. That's the great thing. Then, in spite of all those troubles, they just feel so happy to come at least once to see Baba. I don't know where I was talking about. So this mad fellow, this boy, was mad. His father brought him to Guru Prasad, and he had three children, so he bought garlands for each of them. He bought five. One for himself and his wife, three for the children. And all of them came to Guru Prasad. And this was their first time they were coming to see Baba. They'd heard so much, they'd read so much about Baba, they'd loved Baba so much, but this was their first chance to come and see Baba. And they just couldn't afford even a garland. But even then, they spent 5 cents on the garland for each one, so that they could at least give that much. They didn't have anything else to give to Baba. So when they came to see Baba, this mad boy was also in the queue, and when he came near Baba, he just threw the garland away and ran outside and sat somewhere outside on the veranda. And the father was practically in tears. And then his son didn't meet Baba. So Baba asked him, what's wrong with the boy? So he said, well, Baba, he's mad and he's a great nuisance to us. The little that we have in the house, he breaks. He destroys everything. He wants to eat the whole day. And it's just impossible to live with this boy. Baba said, he's not mad. He's a must. M-U-S-T. No, M-A-S-T. He's a must. A God-intoxicated man. And then Baba said, this was a Friday. And Baba said, remind me about him on Sunday. So he said, okay, Baba. On Saturday again, this whole family came to see Baba. When they were coming, this boy, all on his own in the morning, tells his father, I want a garland for Baba. And he takes the garland. And that day, without his father taking him to Baba, he goes straight to Baba, garlands him, embraces Baba, and sits down there, just like any of us. And then, because Baba said, remind me about him on Sunday, so the father reminded Baba about him on Sunday, and Baba said, I've already taken care of him. That boy is still living. I've seen him. He's become absolutely sober, and he doesn't destroy and do all the things that he used to, but he just sits quietly at one spot, and probably whatever, if he's a must, well, I don't know what he does. But he's become sober, that much I know. Some funny incidents at Guru Prasad. I remember people would come to see Baba from the morning about 9 to 11 o'clock. And in the afternoon, only a few selected people would be called by Baba. And by Baba's love and grace, I was always there each afternoon. And in the afternoon, Baba would play with us cards. You know that famous game of cards, Larisk. And Baba would always win because he always cheated. He was perfect in everything, and therefore he was perfect in the art of cheating also. And I think you know how that game is played. Baba would sit on a chair, and all the rest would be in a semicircle. And the man next to him would be in the opposite party, and the third man would be in his party. So every alternate man was in Baba's party. And then cards would be doled out to everyone, and the first person to get the cards would be Baba. Two or three cards would be given. And anybody who can, if there were two cards doled out, then anybody who could make two tricks won the game. And so as soon as Baba got the two cards and he thought that they were good, he'd keep them. If they were not good, he'd say, "You better shuffle again." And so again he'd get the card. And if he had one good card, he'd look around here and there and pick up somebody's card and put this back there. So he'd always be winning. He'd peep into somebody else's cards and tell him, "Have you got the ace?" And and before the man had dealt out all the cards, Baba's party would have won. And the other party had to rub their noses on the ground because they lost. And Baba said, "You're really fortunate to rub your noses in front of me." But remind me, I'm telling you that Baba cheated, but he wouldn't let any of us cheat. And once one of the people playing there, he looked into the neighbor's cards, and Baba got very annoyed about it. He said, "Why did you cheat?" He said, "Baba, I didn't cheat." He said, "I saw you cheating. Why did you cheat?" He said, "I'm sorry." Mm-hmm. Baba forgave. You know, he always forgave. So that was the game of cards. And each afternoon we'd play this game of cards. And we were just a selected few. And the fun we'd have with Baba that time. The parties that we'd have were always in the afternoon. So one day there was an ice cream party. And it was a mango ice cream. And it was not the usual ice cream that you have in the West. It was a churned ice cream, you know. The big mold and churn. And mango ice cream, you know. Oh, I can think of it right now. So we were playing cards, and all of a sudden the big mold of ice cream arrived, and Baba says, come on, bring it in, let's have ice cream and leave the cards. You know, he'd come down to your level and behave exactly as you would want him to behave. So that ice cream mold was brought inside, and Baba said, "Come on, you start opening it and distributing to everybody." So I got up, and you know, there is a cylinder inside with all ice and salt water on the sides. And Baba said, "Bring the plates." And Pendu rushed inside and brought the plates and the teaspoons. And Baba said, "Come on, open the thing. I want to taste it." So I tried to open the lid, and the lid just refused to budge. And Baba said, come on, quick. And that lid just wouldn't budge. And ultimately when it did budge, it came out with such a shock that the salt water got inside. And I said, "Now what to do?" And nobody had seen what had happened. I was the only fellow who was seeing that thing. I said, "Now what to do?" Baba said, Come on, give it to me. So all the salt water on the top, you know, on the ice cream, and I doled it out to Baba, and Baba said, "Excellent, it's really good. I was just wondering what to do. And then Baba says, "Come on, give it to everybody." So everybody had it, and nobody tasted the salt in it. And once it was Erich's birthday, I remember. And we were playing cards, and all of a sudden his mother sent two huge packetfuls of something called bhajiyas, you know. We call it bhajiyas. They're, in your terms, it would be something like fritters. Is that right? So, and that's one of my weak points in food. So Baba said, "Oh, the bhajiyas have arrived. Come on, let's have them." So mind you, we had all had a very good lunch. And soon after that, these bhajiyas arrived. Two full baked packets. So Baba said, "Bring a tray," and a tray was brought, and Baba said, "Open it." So since I used to sit next to Baba always, I had this thing to open it, and I emptied out one bag on that big tray, and it filled the whole tray. And Baba said, "You hold it while I give it to all the mandri." So, you know, when Baba gave, he didn't give one at a time. He'd give it like that, you know. And so one after another, Francis was the first fellow in the circle. So Francis took it, and naturally nobody could eat it because all had had a big lunch. And so Francis took it in his hands and then walked out of the room, tied a packet and kept it outside for tea time, and came back and sat down. And then the next, and then the next, and then the next. And finally, when it was my turn, Baba picked up a big bunch of it and said, "Put the tray down," and gave it to me. And he said, "Sit here and eat it." And I had already overeaten lunch, and because I like those things, Baba said, "Eat it right now." And with difficulty, you know, one after another, with difficulty, I finished them. And then Baba picks up another bunch and says, "Eat it right now." My taste for bhajiyas went away that day. 1965, remember, the Pune hall was opened. And that time Baba, 1st of May, Baba had gone there for the opening ceremony. And Bhikkhu, you know Bhikkhu, the Milan studio man. Most pictures taken in India by this man, Bhikkhu. He's a great guy. And he took so many pictures of Baba that day. And he enlarged them to a big size of that. And if you go to Pune, you'll see them all hanging on the walls are all Bhikkhu's pictures. So these pictures were all, 200 of them were brought to Baba. And Baba looked at them, and Baba was very happy about it. So this Bhikkhu, he took a number of snaps on the 1st of May, enlarged them and brought them to Baba. And they were very costly. And so Baba told them at Guru Prasad that you must accept payment for them. So he said, "No, Baba, I'm not going to take it. And this is just a gift from me to you." So Baba says, "You must take the money for it." And he said, "No." You know, in love, we disobeyed Baba a number of times. Baba always stressed on obedience more than love, because none of us can love Baba as he should be loved. None of us means besides Mera. Mera is a class by herself. None of us can love Baba as he should be loved. And therefore Baba paid more attention to obedience. And here Baba says, "I'm giving you the money for the pictures," and he says, "No, Baba, I'm not going to accept them." In his love, he forgot that this was disobedience. And then Baba called the Pune Center trustees, and they said that you must pay off Bhikkhu for these 200 pictures because it's quite a lot of expense. So they asked him for the money and to take the money, and he refused. So then Baba said, "What are you going to do then?" So Baba, he says, "Baba, can you grant me one wish? So in exchange for the money, you know." So Baba says, what do you want?" So he says, "Baba, come to my studio once." So Baba said, "Okay." This is Baba's sign for okay. Can you hear me now? And so Baba one day agreed to go to Bhikkhu's studio, and Bhikkhu was all just in seventh heavens, you know, because Baba was coming there. And I remember I had climbed into it. It's on the first floor, and I had climbed up onto the first floor, and this fellow was ready with all his camera, and Baba arrived, and every step that Baba took on on that staircase to come up, he must have flashed the camera a number of times. And then Baba came inside the studio and sat down, and Baba said, "You ask me to pose in whatever position you want me, I'll pose for you today. I'm happy with your love." So this fellow made Baba sit in this position and that position, and Baba posed, and he did everything that Bhikkhu wanted that day. And he must have taken at least 100 snaps that day. And then Baba said, "Are you satisfied?" So he says, "Yes, Baba." He embraced Bhikkhu, and Baba left. And Bhikkhu got inside the dark room to develop all of them, and all of them black. They taught him a lesson, you know, not to disobey. But this Bhikkhu was really full of fun. And I remember once, Baba was in Mahabaleshwar. You know, that's a hill station very near Pune. And Baba was there at Mahabaleshwar in strict seclusion. And that time, Baba called Meherji, you know Meherji. So Meherji, when Meherji got the telegram or the message or something like that, that Baba wants you at Mahabaleshwar, Bhikkhu was there. So Meherji tells Bhikkhu, why didn't you come along with me? So he says, the telegram says only for Meherji. So he says, come along, it doesn't matter. So Bhikkhu and another friend of his, both of them said, come on, well, Meherji is inviting us, we may as well go there. So they got into Meherji's car and they went there. And when they reached Mahabaleshwar, Baba says, why have you two fellows come? And these two fellows are full of mischief, you know, Bhikkhu and that other guy. And so they said, they looked rather sheepish, you know, because they had no orders to come. So Meherji said, Baba, I brought them. Hirat said, Baba, Meherji has brought them. Leave them. It doesn't matter. So Baba said, okay, stay. So Baba forgave them for that. But these fellows are up to mischief, you know. They sat near Baba for some time, then Baba asked them to go out for tea and herb. So these fellows thought of a plan, you know. Just outside where Baba was staying was a post office, a telegraph office. So they went there and sent a telegram to Pune to another Baba lover called Mr. Gadekar, who is dead and gone now. And this Gadekar, old man, they telegrammed him, Baba wants you immediately. And the signature was Eraj underneath. So this telegram reached in the night, you know. In the night it reached Pune. And they had sent it off in the evening, and the telegram reached there in the evening, and this Gadekar opened his eyes in the night and saw this telegram, Baba wants you immediately. He had no other way to go. He's a poor man. He took a taxi for 80 miles to go in a taxi. It cost a fortune. And next morning, Gadekar arrives there with this thing at the place where Baba is staying. And Baba says, who called you? And he says, here's the telegram. Come immediately, Eraj. The telegram said Eraj. So Baba called Eraj. And he said, what are you up to? Mischief? What's this? So he says, Baba, I know nothing about this. It was then Bhikkhu. By the time Bhikkhu and the friend had left from there, you know. So Baba knew and Manli knew that this is all Bhikkhu's mischief. So once again, when Baba was in Pune, and this was at the Botanical Gardens, and before Baba came to Guru Prasad, he used to give darshan in Botanical Gardens. And so Baba called about 25 Baba lovers from Pune, and Bhikkhu and this Mr. S were also there. And all of them went up and embraced Baba, and Baba embraced all the 23, but these two fellows Baba didn't embrace. So Baba says, so they, you know, they knew that they had done this mischief. So Baba just pulled out the telegram from his pocket and said, who said this telegram? They said, yes, Baba, we said. So Baba says, go and stand under that tree for some time. So both of them were asked to stand under the tree. And Bhikkhu is quite a bigly built man, and the other fellow is also a big man. And both of them standing there crying away, you know, while all of them enjoying Baba's company. And then Baba called them, forgave them, said, don't do this again, and embrace them, and it was all over. I remember once I was going to Guru Prasad, and when I was leaving, the town I come from, a medical rep, we call him medical reps, one who canvasses for his drugs, he is a schizophrenic, and he has told me that, he asked me where I was going. I said I was going to see Meher Baba. He had heard about Meher Baba. He says, can I come? I said, Baba's in seclusion, he may not grant you darshan. If you want him, then come. So he said, I'll join you. So he joined me, and both of us came to Pune. And this man had not slept a wink for the last 7 years. He was, you know, something wrong in his upper story here. So he had had a lot of treatment for it, even shots and things like that, but nothing worked. And for 7 years, this man had not had a wink of sleep. And he said, I'm going to see Baba. So he came. And I was called early morning, and he came in with the regular people at 9 o'clock. So when he arrived, I was looking at Baba. Baba suddenly looked at me and says, your friend has come. I said, yes, Baba. And then he sat down there, and after the program, morning program finished, I remember Baba, he came up to Baba, embraced Baba, bowed down to him, and Baba said, what's the trouble with you? You know, Baba was a doctor also, because he advised a number of people what drugs to take. And so he asked this man, well, what's the trouble? He said, Baba, I haven't slept for 7 years. Baba said, 7 years? Yes, 7 years. So Baba, you know, Baba did this. He This is an E, a Q. It's a tablet called Equanil. It's a tranquilizer. So he told Goyer that write out a prescription for him and Equanil tablets. And Baba said, take one every night for 30 days and take my name before you take. He said, okay, Baba. He took the prescription, came out. And when we were going out to Guru Prasad, he tells me, Doc, I've taken a number of these tablets and nothing, and these tablets do no good to me. I can never sleep with these. I said, well, all these tablets that you have been prescribed to you have been prescribed by doctors. Here it is Baba giving it to you. So you must take it. So he went straight to the market and bought 30 tablets of Equanil. And he said, he was with me the whole day. And that night he went to his hotel and I went to mine. And he took one tablet in the night. And he fell asleep. And he fell asleep till the next morning. Baba had called him the next morning. And the next morning when the manager of the hotel woke him up, he got up. Till then he was fast asleep. And he comes to Baba and says, Baba, in 7 years this is my first sleep. So Baba was very happy. I was very happy that here at least now there seems to be some cure for this poor chap. But it was not in his destiny to be cured. So he was with Baba the next day and then he went home. He took 7 days, for 7 days these tablets, and then he stopped them. And he's just as it is now, as he was before. He doesn't sleep even now. You know, this is what we call as destiny and fate. Now, the difference between that, you know what the difference is, destiny and fate. I won't give you the details. But, you know, in his fate, it was meant that he must suffer. But Baba wanted to get him out of that and therefore gave him this prescription. But he just refused to take them and therefore he had to suffer his own fate, in short. Now, well, obedience. Baba always stressed on obedience much more than love. And you might read volumes on obedience, you might hear discourses on obedience, but you can never know what obedience really means until you had been with Baba. I remember once at Guru Prasad, I was bending over and I had a zip bag, a small zip bag, and I had removed something from it and I had closed the zip halfway. And I was bending over and closing the thing. Just then somebody patted on my back and I looked up and it was Baba. And Baba says, come on. So in the act of straightening up, I finished closing the zip. Baba says, that is disobedience. Obedience would mean leave it right there and walk away. So how he taught you obedience. I remember another very bitter experience on obedience. This was during the 1962 Selvas. Baba had given me instructions that while he was sitting on the stage there with his lovers, I had been instructed not to leave the tent. I said, okay, Baba. He says, for the rest of the day you can do all your medical work, you can attend to everyone, but during the time that I'm on the stage, don't leave the tent. I said, okay, Baba. I'll keep that in mind. That was just one order Baba gave me for that east-west sarvas. And how I repented. You see, on the first day, you were there? You weren't there. Well, on the first day it was very, very warm. And the westerners were sitting there and fanning themselves, because it was really frightfully warm that day. And in the afternoon, while the session was going on, suddenly one of the Australian boys fell down from his chair and fainted because the heat was too much for him. So it was a spontaneous thing for me to rush to him, because I was very near to Baba standing next to the stage. And so I rushed to him. And I picked him up and I saw that he was unconscious, so I thought I'd remove him from there, because people had collected around him and it was disturbing the Selvas program. So I told a few volunteers, come on, let's lift him up and take him up to the side room. So we picked him up and took him to the side room of Guru Prasad, and I forgot my order, I had not to leave the tent. Took him to the side room and gave him some treatment. He didn't respond, so I thought I'd get my blood pressure machine. So I rushed to my medical tent. And while I was halfway there, suddenly that thought came. Baba had told me not to leave the tent. Now what was I going to do? I had already left the tent, and I was running towards my tent to get the blood pressure machine. So I thought, now what shall I do? Shall I go back and leave the boy to die there? I thought, I may as well go to my tent and inform my friend, who was another doctor there, to attend to him. So I went there, told this doctor, please attend to this boy. And I went back to where Baba was and stood in the tent. I stood there leaning against one of the pillars, I remember, and I felt terribly bitter that day for disobeying Baba. Why did I leave the tent? Baba had given me only just one order not to leave the tent, and that also I had disobeyed. And I was just crying within myself, why did I leave this tent? Why did I leave this tent? While this program, darshan program, was going on, Baba looks at me. He knew everything that was within, going on within. He called me on the stage. He says, what are you thinking of? This was his sign of what are you thinking of. So I said, Baba, I'm very sorry, I left the tent. I shouldn't have left the tent. So Baba says, forget it, go and stand there. I said, okay, Baba. I went and stood there. But this mind, oh God, it was just hell. Again, the same thoughts. Why did I leave the tent? Why did I leave the tent? I should not have left the tent. You know, it was just terrible. Another 5 minutes like that, and Baba, come here. So again he called me. He said, what are you thinking of? I said, Baba, the same thing. So Baba says, forget it. Go and stand there. I said, okay, Baba. Went and stood there. And this time, with double vigor, you know. I thought, I never get headaches. Except when something happened. And that day I think I must have got a headache. It was just splitting, you know. Why did I leave this tent? I thought I should die because I disobeyed Baba. And a third time Baba looked at me and called me. And I came to the stage. This time he didn't ask me what was wrong. All he did was, he just caught a hold of my hand. Go. And you know, just that one touch, and this thing became absolute quiet. Just tranquil, silence. Not a thought of this incident. I stood there till 5 o'clock, till the program finished, and then after that I had to do a lot of medical work. And at 12:10 in the night, when I went to bed, I thought of this incident. Till then, not a thought of this even. This is just obedience, how much obedience we used to do. I remember one of the Western ladies,